So yeah, it's the topic is FPGAs and finance, a practical 101 as in 2026. It's an ongoing project and hobby project, so nothing commercial, but important thing is it's all open source things I'm using that. Why this project and what are the applications in the financial FPGAs? Then I'll talk about that, okay, why basically we would see eFPGAs versus CGRAs, and if time permits, a quick demo. But yeah, the only good demo is the demo which does not work. So let's see if it works, if the time permits. Why this project? So, you know, we know, I mean, FPGA is hard, and hardware is hard, and FPGA is even harder. So the other thing is that I witnessed that when we are talking about the applications being running on FPGAs when it comes to finance, they are gate kept. So you know, you don't you have access to open source hardware and FPGA tools, but still the struggle has been, the learning curve has been a lot of high for the applications to run on the FPGA when it comes to FPGA finance applications. So, and how to fix it? So my mental model was that, you know, you have to first find out, you know, what are the actual applications, and then break down in a Lego approach that, you know, what are the computations being run on the FPGA. And the most important part for me was that, you know, which open source projects can be helpful to implement and understand those computations, you know, because that's the spirit of the first time also in open source community, because traditionally Silicon Tools has not been open source, but now we have. So why not just see in a hobby project what kind of tools we can use to actually run those applications which were traditionally very closed source and gate kept. So to break it down, what we're talking about is, you know, when talk about financial applications, we mean traditionally this HFT, high frequency trading, and then you have this quantitative workload. And you see a block diagram or picture on the right side. The most common thing is that, you know, you have a plumbing pipeline. So regardless what kind of applications you have, whether it's HFT or quantitative, you have a plumbing pipeline which is basically, you know, most FPGA-related techniques exist in that plumbing pipeline. And this is what, when I was basically working on those applications in, as a hobby project, I found out that, you know, okay, if I can somehow deep dive into this plumbing pipeline, I could see using those tools, understand that what kind of FPGA computations you can understand from these tools. Also, when I say you have a small table, what is the difference, you know? Like, for instance, you have HFT that is traditionally called ultra low latency. That's the goal. In the quantitative is you don't have the, somehow you're not targeting the low latency, you're talking actually the throughput. Workload is slightly different in both applications. So you have stream driven, like, you know, event arcs stream in a sense. And then you have in the quantitative, it's more batch oriented. Most important part is this control flow, yeah. So you have minimal branching in HFT, so, but on the other side, in the quantitative finance, it's basically branch heavy. Memory, also important. So in quantitative finance, of course, you have you know, large data sets, so it's the memory is actually irregular, and on the other hand, with HFT, it's predictable. So that is because it's mostly deterministic workload. I mean, that's the one background, but the most important part is that, you know, that is the the most basic workflow which you have in, let's say, in HFT, you know. You have an Exchange server, then you have a data feed. You have this TIG data, that is the FPGA side, and then you have the Exchange server. So to cut it very short, so I mean, terminologies, TIG data, that is, you know, a time-ordered stream of signals. That is basically, you know, you mutate the market state in hardware. So that is, the, you know, you can imagine the stream is coming. It's from the, that is the SmartNIC stream, AXI stream, you can say. And then you have, basically, that is a hardware-generated command packet. So that is the most basic terminology which you can summarize in this FPGA part. So when I say plumbing HFT, so the most part was that, you know, yeah, that's the, like, you know, the most knowledge gatekeeping was mostly on the HFT part. In the next slide, what I would like to mostly focus on what would be that, you know, which tools I have been using to understand the flow and how that can be implemented on FPGA. And when I say plumbing HFT, you know, my mental model was that, you know, you have a data feed, okay, that's fine, that's a stream coming. What else I want to look into that? That, okay, networking and high-speed I/O, memory and clock timing. These three things, like networking, memory, and clock timing. And in this networking, memory, and clock timing, what I would like to see more inside is that, you know, I mostly, you know, you have physical silicon that is the vendor specific, but then you can go into this MAC pipeline. So you have, you know, elastic buffers and zero buffer design. So you have to really play with the buffers in the MAC pipeline. And then, understandably, the interconnects, you know, DMA, Ethernet. But most important in my experience was that, you know, when you have this timing closure and clock domain, because I'll show you in the next slides that, you know, the CDC crossings are a lot in this pipeline, in HFT pipeline. So that is, and we know that, you know, you can't actually simulate the clock crossing. So this is where the open source tools becomes useful. And yeah, memory subsystem microarchitecture as well. So also there are some tools which I will show in the next slide, which actually open source tools which helps you to actually unfold or break down the memory modules on the FPGA. So that is what I was also looking forward in this practice as well. So when I'm talking about the market data feed, was that, you know, I mean, that's the, if I had to start with the tools, you know, we know that, you know, the L1 part, which is the physical layer, that is the hard IP. So, you know, that is the proprietary and tied to the silicon vendor. So that's basically not an open RTL. What I was basically most understandably more interested was in this L2, L3 layer, when I had to see, you know, what kind of tools exist which has open RTL for the L2 part and understandably L3, you know, where I can actually see the buffering, minimized buffering part. And this, so I actually started with the tools looking into which have completely open RTL, so nothing proprietary. And even in L2 layer, you have some vendor tools which are still proprietary, but you can customize using their own tools, but still that does not serve the purpose. So I actually wanted to see what are the actual open RTL where you can play with the, let's say, this PCS, PMA, and MAC pipelines. So I was using mostly, you know, Just a background that, you know, when I started using some OpenRTL for L2 layer, AMD Xilinx, yes, it's basically a vendor, but their project OpenNIC is basically OpenRTL. So you can actually, that is also part of my demo if time allows. So you can actually implement the MEC part inside the FPGA, and you can have your own user logic and system Verilog. You can try that. You can generate the, you can simulate that. You can try the different frequency, like 350 megahertz for ultra scale FPGA and 250 megahertz for also for ultra scale. NetFPGA, I think most of the people in this room may already know that. That's an old, I tried it. I mean, of course, that's something, you know, NetFPGA, it's a very, very powerful platform for the Vertex 7 and other FPGAs, but it's somehow outdated, right? I mean, this is, it's a good prototype, but it's, having said that, it's basically, yeah, I mean, it's very helpful. The other tool which I came across was this SNET OpenCore. My understanding with OpenCore was that as well, the RTL which exists is around like 9-10 years old, so I don't know how relevant is that. I never tried that. The most important was this Corundum, and I'm quite sure people in this room already know about Corundum, because that is the, I always say that, you know, we owe a lot to the Corundum, because that is the niche open source project which exists, where you can actually, you know, tailor your RTL for the L2 and even the L3 layer. And there was also a talk for Corundum in FOSDEM by the main contributor. Also, for me, helpful was that, you know, the video which existed and also the code walkthrough for the Corundum was very helpful. It's basically, like I mentioned, it's niche, it's complex using Corundum. And it's basically an open, it's a NIC platform. So what I experienced in last days was that there has been an effort to actually make it more easier to use. That is basically the FPGA Ninja Taxi. So that is the part of the Corundum code base, but the main team has broken down the complex part of Corundum into more reusable IP. So that is, and I can't recall the license, but of course, understandably, it's an open source license. This is one I was playing with in last weeks or months. This I mentioned is OpenNIC. That is, you have, it's completely based in the system Verilog RTL, so you can, I just had a snapshot for the only like QDMA interface, CMAC, and you can put on the, develop your own RTL in the user logic. It works, so, but what I haven't still done is that, you know, I haven't implemented any user logic, which is the trading logic or application, financial technology application in the OpenNIC as so far now. But someone who really wants to break down those computations and understand what's happening inside the silicon logic, you can use OpenNIC. That was, for me, what it was helpful. That is the Corundum. So that is, I have been using this taxi platform, but I shared the Corundum, high level view, because it just tells you that with the, you can actually fine grain control the hardware queues, and also, which is important, is that if you, even if you have like ultra scale Vortex 7 FPGA for AMD or Intel, you can use that with your own L2 stack. So that is basically, I haven't, like this is the, I have to mention that this I have cited from the Corundum page as well, only the page as well. So that is the, I'm using more on the, this taxi part. So what I, because like I mentioned, Corundum is a bit more complex, so it does not, I mean, it, for me, it was an overkill if I had to just run like HFT or application. So luckily, the group has, the contributors of Corundum has released this taxi project, which is basically you have reusable IPs in terms of, you know, Ethernet, Mac, and then you can use the AXI IPs as well. You can use timestamping. So what I did was that I took the bare minimum inside the taxi project, which had to deal with the L2 and L3 layer RTL, and understandably, CocoaTB for the, mainly I'm using CocoaTB for the regression verification. And very later, it's also an open source tool. I'm using it for the more cycle accurate simulation on the FPGA. So this is, if someone who is interested into using, you know, a smart NIC like Corundum, and it's complex, so you can actually break down to this tool chain. You can really, really get started with the smart NIC computations. Parsing, so, I mean, apart from this financial terms, what was the most important part when I started implementing the parsing part inside that architecture? And why, I mean, why basically it's, what is actually common in FPGA-based HFT, and why I'm using this exchange-native binary protocols? Because, you know, the point is that, you know, it's a hobby project, so you have a lot of protocols, and for me, it was important that, you know, I need to see which is the most implementable in a less complex way. So I chose this exchange-native binary protocol. Why? Because I had, you know, it's understandable because I had to see, you know, which has a fixed or semi-fixed binary layout, because I don't want complex binary layouts. And I wanted to do, have known schemas, meaning that, you know, I don't want to really go into the nitty-gritty details of the financial applications. I just want to get started on the FPGA. And yeah, dynamic fields, that makes the implementation easy, because of course, if it's static, it's easier to also reconfigure on the FPGA part. And then deterministic is because that is common. So you have to, in any case of parsing, you need a deterministic protocol. So that's why I choose that protocol. Easy to pipeline in RTL. So that is also that when I was choosing this protocol, I was mostly interested that if I have to use this open RTL, and if I have to have a POC, which is implement this exchange-native binary protocol, also reduce or have a acceptable tick-to-data latency, I needed an easy protocol so that it's easy to pipeline as well inside the RTL. So when we say parsing, so in most cases, what I understood was that, you know, what are the core design principles? So you have this parsing module, and what I want to achieve on the FPGA. So One thing was that, you know, it has should be have a zero buffer cut through. So meaning that, you know, it's, I mean, when you have the market feeding on the FPGA, so you need the data optimized, so for the field extraction. This is what I was targeting. And then what I wanted to more as well, that I mentioned last slide, was that this pipeline determinism, that, you know, I need to have this fixed latency execution path. So I want, this was the one core principle I was targeting on that. On the FPGA implementation, so it's mostly streaming, not mostly, always streaming. So it's the pipelined FSMs. When it's in any parsing, it would be pipeline FSMs. And barrel shifters. So that was the most common computation when using this parsing. So you have this, you know, for this realignment within the access TME bus. So this was when I was using this RTL, OpenRTL, I had this thing, okay, when I have to implement the parsing part, so I need this multi-stage, you know, barrel shifter, so because it helps you for this so-called dynamic fixed realignment. So that was the one parsing part. This is the parser FSM, so, I mean, it's like most a common FSM. So you have basically it starts getting the payload, and then you have you get the byte inside the parsing module from the network part, and then it detects, you know, what type of message is it, and you have a common message protocols, like, you know, you can cancel, add message. So that is implemented inside the parsing module, which is facing integrating with the L2 layer. So I took this image because that is also an HFT accelerator project, which I they use an RTL, open source RTL. So just to understand, you know, what kind of FSM. What is the state machine inside that? What kind of state machine is that in the parser module? Memory part. So when it comes to this order book, well, there's only one main data structure which actually affects your, you know, latency. So what is mostly you're dealing is you're dealing with this memory and combinational logic, you know. So you have a pipeline and streaming. So in most cases, which I'll show the next slide, is that, you know, it's the BRAM. So you play with most BRAM because that is more than enough. And when I mentioned memory and combinational logic, meaning that is the understandably the two basic things which you're dealing on the FPGA silicon when it comes to order book architecture. Like I mentioned, that is the on-chip BRAM memory, mostly playing with the BRAM. You can also use UltraRAM, but that is vendor specific, so not every FPGA are using the UltraRAM. So when it comes to memory, mostly they're using BRAMs. And HBM is overkill because we are not bound by the capacity inside the order module. So that is, you can implement, you can do anything with BRAM for all order books. Since we are running out of time, so yeah, actually, this is one project which dates back to 2016-17. They implemented the complete tool chain except the Ethernet part inside C++ high-level synthesis. So what I have been doing recently was that, you know, that project was implemented around 2016, 2017. So what I do now is that I try to use some other compiler optimizations which were not existing at that time to see if we can achieve better latency in this pipeline. So this is one part which I actually wanted to show in the code walkthrough, but yeah, I can also make a video later on and put it there. So when I mentioned the beginning of the talk that, you know, what kind of open source memory modules I was looking into, I mean, I did not use so far anything regarding the BRAM or memory modules, but I found out following projects which were really interesting to see, you know, how you can use these couple of projects which has memory modules to have, for instance, you know, you can implement memory banks where traditionally you are dependent on the proprietary tools. So yeah, I think their time is up. So because timing closer, so that is the mostly tools which I was using. A hard problem, this is for the following tools which I was using for the CDC tools. So that's it. Yeah, the last thing is that I have been actually fixing bugs in one open source tool which is from the AMD, but it's open source. So what I am actually doing is that in this tool is that to make it easier for the users to use, because if you go into this project, you'll find out that it's really tough to even get started. So this is what I wanted to show as well in a demo. But yeah, I can actually, it's on the GitHub, so I'll release that. You can see that. That's it. Yeah. Thank you.